Dean has to pull back before he does something like punch Cass in the face. His office blurs into meaninglessness, the only certain thing the angel's straight-backed, icy presence. Again, he tries to tell himself, no possible way. Not Sam, not after Mom, not after Dad. I came, Cass says, quietly, voice rough, earnest, and it hurts, because Dean's seen him become gradually more human. The flashes of interest in human things, the libation for the DiPietro family spirits, saving Victor. And now it's 60 steps back. Only Cass thinks he's still being human, doing the compassionate thing. I came, Cass continues, because either way, by my hand or by the hand of another human, Sam will have to die. And I don't want you to make that choice. And if I let you kill, if I let you go after Lilith, I'm still making that decision. Despair twists his throat shut. He has to cough to get his breath back, and the breath he finally manages to draw is too close to a sob. I'm sorry, Cass, but I can't let you. Do you think you can bind me? Castiel sounds almost incredulous. I can sure as hell try. Dean's voice cants upward, and there's no way he's stopping it. Better anger than fear. Being scared never helped anyone, but anger helps him find his focus, the resolve he needs. You stay the hell away from my brother, Cass. You still think I serve you? Castiel moves now, sleek, feline, and Dean abruptly remembers Castiel spent the last few millennia fighting whatever hell vomits up. I've been stationed here for 2,000 years. Castiel's voice has gone tight, the old anger barely controlled. The air snaps with it, with menace. In that time, in time you can't begin to imagine the battles I've been through, the number of humans who have died by my hand. Sam won't be the first. But... And the anger breaks down into pleading. He'll be the first, I regret. The entire room feels way too small. He wants out, but he can't leave, not with Castiel on the edge of leaving him and going to take care of Sam himself. I'll do it, Castiel continues, moving, trying to meet his eyes. Reluctantly, Dean lets him, fastens onto the near desperation on Cass's face. You don't have to do anything, just... I can't just let it happen, Cass. He can't, not with a lifetime of looking out for the kid behind him. I'm sorry, Cass, I can't. You can't stop me. Castiel reminds him. Please. Fine, he'll beg. Cass, come on, please, I'm begging you here, man. Just give me time, okay? Time to come up with something else. He touched Cass, tried to bring him round with simple human contact, but the angel looks spooked enough already, on edge in a way that suggests he's about to vanish. Please. Cass's face melts into sorrow again, and when he disappears, Dean contemplates the empty space he's left. Anna's gone, nowhere in the city or its environs, and so in a place Castiel can't follow. He could possibly summon her, but that would draw attention to him and to his failure. The sigils on his wrist burn, not for the first time. He wonders what would happen if he cut his wrist and broke the cartouche surrounding them. Orders are always clear, and they are what they are. Castiel chases radio waves across the city, tangled in the long, staticky twine of human words. Spirits benign and malevolent avoid him. The few gods and goddesses who live here acknowledge him briefly but go about their business. Orders are always clear. He can feel the blank spot around the diner, still whole, the word set as it is in invisible alchemical silver. Lilith and her companion are somewhere, well hidden from his eyes. He should be searching for them anyway. No, he should have killed both of them. He holds his sword tightly, despite the creeping wonderment that he stayed in his human shape, such that the sword is no longer a part of him, but an independent object. A slim, diamond-tipped steel blade. It glitters, blinding and beautiful and deadly, next to the low gloss of the city's glass and metal girders. I was made for this. He is his orders, his purpose, like any other angel under heaven. Only, as Dean would say, not so much anymore. He alights outside the roadhouse of all places. It's closed, a curt sign on the door saying it'll reopen eventually, with sigils and charms scrawled across the door and the windows alike. Effortlessly ignores them and opens the door. Ellen Harvell stops sweeping and looks up, a glare already on her face. It melts a little when she sees him. Castiel? She sets the broom aside, wipes her hands on the small apron around her waist. Case you didn't notice, honey, but we're closed. I did notice, Castiel says. How could he not? Ellen laughs at him and shakes her head. So, what can I do for you? Hope it doesn't involve drinks or food. Otherwise, you've fled out of luck, she says. And Castiel shakes his head, wishes he has the words to explain his presence. Only, the words are angelic, having to do with fellowship and communion, and the human counterpart seem inadequate. Oh, honey, if that's what you need... Her movements are quick, economical, as she turns and strides across crackling, splintered glass to the bar. Once there, she bends down. Soft shush of a drawer, a cabinet opening, and a bottle of liquor, warm golden brown and the few lights left, appears on the counter. Ellen sets two tumblers down beside it.
You guys might solve all your problems with hymns or whatever, she says. But things work a little different down here. Pull up a seat, and we'll get started.
T-minus 1 day until the next murder. T-minus 1 day until a whole lot of unpleasantness, Dean figures. A few people have started packing those idiot sandwich boards around, proclaiming the end of the world and repent now. And one guy smart enough to carry a poster board sign reading, "It's the end of the world. Have lots of sex." Usually Dean would laugh and probably congratulate the guy on his optimism. But not now. Now? He knows intellectually it's not the end of the world. Not the end of the whole world. There are rules. Rules even Lucifer can't break, that keep the gods, goddesses, and spirits in balance, and the humans worshipping them on decent, if not blood-free, terms. No, it'll be a bang and some lights, maybe some hellfire, plagues, and probably some churches burned, and a fuck of a lot of trouble. The angels would group together, and other powerful deities. Hell, maybe even Jehovah himself would drag his ass out of hiding, and together they'd drop Lucifer in heaven's supermax for another 1,000 years. It's only his world that's ending. No big deal. Victor's careful around him. Hell, at least Victor's back, and he's a lot more grateful for that than his clumsy words can say. They're working together now, or Victor's working and Dean's trying not to hate the world and himself and Cass for fucking betraying him. Trying to work out some location where Lilith, where Sam, might stage the final ritual.
It'd be easier if we were on a fucking cop show, Dean grunts.
Even taking out all known inhabited buildings and all buildings in regular use, there's still way too much ground to cover.
They'd have some demon detecting program to figure this out.
We aren't on a fucking cop show. Victor shoves another stack of papers at Dean. You know, Dean, if we work this out, we might be able... Don't, Victor, okay? He hasn't told Victor about Castiel yet, although he's probably worked it out on his own. Just don't. And Victor nods and drops the subject, for which Dean gives silent thanks. They work on, Dean not really seeing the schematics for a block of warehouses on the old side of town. He crosses out 2 that are in constant use, 24-hour traffic, circles a 3rd, and scribbles a question mark over it. Mostly, he sees Sam and his failure. Dad, I tried. Dean. Smarter this time, the angel's in the doorway, a safe distance from Dean. Castiel stands there, same as always, angelic, unchanged. Dean looks for blood, for some evidence of anything, and can't find it. You... he whispers, standing up, watching Castiel tense, and the satisfaction in that is mean and deep,
The hell with Castiel bringing down the fire of heaven on him. You have a fuck of a lot of nerve coming here after.
Dean, I didn't. The words are fast, like Cass can't get them out fast enough.
I...
He trails off, shakes his head, and disbelief filters into the silence. I went against orders. I didn't try to find Lilith. Where Cass is going warp 9, Dean's brain is plodding, trying to process what Cass has just said. Still alive, still alive. And pow, the relief hits him like a belt of strong liquor, blazing and hot, making him dizzy. Victor's asking what's going on. Castiel's replying tersely, not even looking away from Dean, those blue eyes anchoring him. And how, when Dean's world has been Sam and the job and Sam and the job, he's making room for Cass's face? When this started happening, Dean has no idea. Dean lets himself move closer, and Cass allows it. Cass looks lost, like those orders are the only thing that had any meaning in his world. And maybe they had been the only meaningful things, going by what Cass had said. And there's nothing else now, only the weird, uncertain future that goes with things like free will and disobedience. And that seems to panic Cass a hell of a lot more than a secretary filling him up or a glass of beer.
Speaking of beer, were you drinking?
With Ellen. Cass looks away, a bit sheepish. He smells vaguely of whiskey and old smoke, the faint perfume owned by God only knows how many bars. She said some things.
Yeah, I'm sure she did.
He can imagine what Ellen said pretty damn clearly.
Cass, shit. Thank you.
Don't thank me yet, Cass says, but the tone is warm, unexpectedly humorous. We still have to stop Lilith somehow. And I think there may be a way. Cass outlines his plan, quickly, efficiently, and it's easy suddenly to see him in something like angel fatigues, over tables spread with maps, coordinating things. Victor nods thoughtfully, asks, "Okay, but where the hell are we going to find these two?" Castiel frowns.
"The diner we've been meeting at." The revelation smacks into him, 1-2 punch, of Sam still alive and then the door breaking open into the sudden dizzying hope that they might be able to do this. It's the first floor of a 4-story building. The rest of the floors are abandoned.
"The wards around the diner haven't changed," Castiel says quickly, almost on top of him, "and they're difficult to set."
"I'll grab Bobby," Victor says, and is up and out.
Castiel spends the last few hours warding himself and the few others selected to go on this mission against detection. Missouri Mosley, the psychic he'd almost encountered his first day here, helps him with gree-gree bags, fingers deft as she arranges the small pinches of herbs, dirt, and animal bone charms in their small leather bags and ties them tight as she murmurs spells over them. The bags go into pockets and vehicles, themselves already warded. He takes care of Dean himself, checking the charms around his wrists, taped down to keep them quiet, peels back his shirt to inspect the tattoo, the amulet resting against Dean's chest, warm with the heat of his body. Under his fingers, Dean's heart thumps once, hard, and Dean's breath shudders against his face. They aren't enough. The amulet is powerful, more powerful than Dean knows, but not enough to hide him from demonic vision. And so Castiel turns away, cuts quickly into his own forearm so the blood runs thick and red. Dean makes a sound of objection that freezes when Castiel looks an order at him. Be still. And he paints the open third eye on Dean's forehead and on his chest, tracing the symbols with his fingernail, the worlds and angles that command all demonic eyes to turn aside. The cartouche goes around the three letters set there. His breath sets the symbols, firm as any tattoo, although they'll wash away eventually. And if your own tattoo breaks, if something happens, this is as good as your own flesh. Better. Castiel expects Dean's typically abrasive form of gratitude, a suspicious yet approving examination of the symbol on his chest. What he doesn't expect is Dean's mouth settling over his, pressing carefully, and more, his own mouth sliding open, warm, damp,
and Dean sighing into him. Oh yeah, Cass. And something inside Castiel, fear, blind terror, excitement, wanting, had shaken loose, like shaking open his wings, and he'd stepped back suddenly. And Dean had smiled apologetically, done up his buttons, the twitch in his cheek the only sign of the knife stab of pain. It's fierce enough for Castiel to move close to him again, pulled by Dean as so few things in this world pull him. To hesitantly kiss him again, and not pull back when Dean's hands carefully hold his face. The memory, brief as it is, they'd been interrupted by Joe banging on Dean's office door, hollering for them to wait for later, they have to get a move on, stays with him. He knows, with angelic certainty, it will always stay with him. There, just under the skin of the present. For now he forces himself to concentration, Dean gone still and watchful next to him. They're across the street from the diner, and according to Dean, who can still see, there are lights on the fourth floor.
Dim, Dean reports. Candlelight, probably.
He looks over at Victor.
You got the time?
Rounding 2300 hours, 30 minutes.
That's my cue, Dean says.
Dry smile for Cass. Quick brush of his fingers along Castiel's arm. He shudders when Dean vanishes, uneasy, even though Victor, with his mortal sight unblinded, narrates Dean's uneventful journey from the rim of the circle to the side entrance to the building housing the diner. Bobby and the others, watching through binoculars a safe distance away on the rooftops, pick up the thread where Victor leaves off. Dean needs only a moment to pick the lock, and then he's inside. After that, he's lost to angelic and human eyes alike. Castiel takes a steadying breath and almost has to laugh, surprised at himself. He hadn't been lying when he told Dean he'd been in battle. Far too many times, and for far too long for Dean to truly understand. He accepts this as a condition of his existence, a warrior angel assigned to the garrisons responsible for keeping hell where hell belongs, and has accepted the hazard of his life and the lives of his brothers, as part of that existence, as much a part as his wings or his true voice. But he's never been able to accept Dean's, and that knowledge hits him with the force of an epiphany. With the same shudder of insight that had characterized his first moments in this world as Castiel. "We're giving you 10 minutes, and then we're all in," Victor whispers, the words barely a breath but enough to cut through Castiel's distraction. He nods to show he's understood, uncertain how Victor would react to a voice in his head telling him the same. Showtime. Carefully, Victor chips away at the one sigil that keeps out Castiel's physical form, following the line of Castiel's finger, flecks of alchemized silver drifting away in the breeze. It's utterly still when Victor finishes. Nothing from the abandoned building, but Castiel knows better than to think neither demon knows what just happened. "Good luck." The words fade against Castiel's ears as he slips inside the circle. The outer world dulls slightly, flickers as though uncertain of its own existence. Still, the road under Castiel's shoes is reliable concrete, and the cars remain cars. This late at night, the diner's shut, its windows lifeless and dead. He follows the faint trace of his awareness of Dean, more to do with what he'd gleaned from Victor's mind and the minds of those on the rooftops than Dean himself, lost as he is to Castiel's sight. He hates that now, more than ever. Dean had left the door unlocked behind him. Like any ordinary mortal, Castiel opens the door with his hand, feeling ahead of himself with his true sight, carefully clearing any obstacles away from the stairs, settling rusty bolts and rotting floorboards into silence. As the blueprints say, there's a stairway, narrow, steep. Castiel takes to his true form for a moment, brilliance muted, wings his way up 4 steep flights. Cheating, maybe, but the 10 minutes press on him. The knowledge that Dean is likely up there now, alone, presses on him. This close now, he can sense the working of magic, slow and heavy, almost stagnant. No chanting, then.
which means Dean is there. The ritual's been stopped, its power gathering and twisting, a storm held in check. He resolves back into his human shape outside the door, can sense another circle just beyond it, drawn crudely in chalk, but still effective. A whip snap of power, enough to break in the steel door and blow out the small inset glass window, and it melts linoleum in a long running line through the rim of the first binding circle. In the half-light he can see the tall figure of Sam Winchester holding a knife, and Dean, bound with invisible shackles, the Colt frozen at his side with his finger around the trigger. He knows Dean can see him, can feel the heavy rush of relief, as though Dean's wrapped, shaking fingers around his hand. The demon, Sam, scowls ferociously, glaring up at the intrusion. A cruel smile flexes those lips, a face that Castiel thinks would otherwise be kind. Still smiling, the demon turns, eloquent in its slowness, its knowledge. The knife coming up and Dean standing there, frozen.
No!
The words makes the windows shudder, muted by the wards covering this place. Some of the windows break, but don't shatter. The candles gutter, but nothing in the circle changes. Not the demon, not Dean, not the demon's upraised hand, or the light glittering on the short, rune-carved blade. Before he knows it, he's moving, three long strides, a sudden spike of fear from Dean, of helpless rage. And in that second, that single crystallizing second, he feels it, what he stepped into. From the corner of his eye, he sees the other demon, the dark-haired one, her presence concealed from him until his body's sight revealed her, whipping through the shadows. Her hand flings fire on the ground, and it blazes up in a circle, perfect. The smoke sweet-smelling and deadly.
"We've caught us an angel," the demon says.
Her delicate mouth stretches wide in a grin. The firelight glints off her teeth. Castiel snarls. She laughs again, walking the circumference of the circle, teasing the holy fire with her fingertips.
"Hello, angel face. You're just in time for the show."
The invisible chains around Dean's body loosen and disappear. The clenching, immobile fear for Cass and Sam, though, remains the same. Somewhere under it is anger, brewing slowly, picking up steam.
"Let him go," he rasps.
Being psychic sucker-punched in the collarbone hurts like a son of a bitch. The girl, Ruby, had done it when he'd gotten through the door, ambushed him, and he'd been so fixated on Sam, he'd fucking forgotten about her.
"You fucking let him go right now."
"Or you'll what? Shoot your baby brother?" Sam's mouth curves in a cruel smile as the demon laughs.
"That really would be something."
The demon eyes the Colt scornfully, and it knows, just like Dean knows, the thing's as useful as a pop gun right now, while the demon's wearing Sam around like a Sasquatch suit. "Cain and Abel, the sacrifice all over again. It never changes with you humans."
"Can we skip Sunday school?"
Dean surreptitiously flexes his fingers around the Colt's grip. The demon, "You can call me Lilith," sees it anyway, and smirks. The rage bubbles up a little more fiercely.
"So, what are you planning on, sacrificing him or something? Pop Lucifer out of the hot box?"
Sam's face contorts.
"I'd speak of him with respect if I were you."
"Really?" Making his voice light in an effort, especially since his ribcage wants to collapse like a bad roof.
"I hate to break it to you, but there's no way you're getting your boss out of the slammer. Not riding Sam. He'd never say yes to you. Any of you. For anything."
"You really think so?" Again the laughter, and it almost sounds ridiculous. Sam's idiot laugh mixed with a demon's superiority. In the corner of his eye, Dean sees Castiel tense, can feel the slow grind of the angel's power. He moves slowly around the perimeter of the incense circle, hating the evil glow in the corner of his eyes. Ruby's slow, circling figure, with all her attention focused on Castiel. There is something Cass wants. His silent, angelic voice muffled by the static of the fire, like a signal clouded over.
"Sam was always so much more ambitious than you. All you wanted. and the demon flings the word at him. Want. A ridiculously misguided thing for a boy to do. Was to follow in your daddy's footsteps and find the thing that killed your mother. It laughs again. You really should have become an electrician if you wanted to find out what it was that happened. A short in the walls, and you spent the rest of your life hunting us. Dean thumbs the safety off. The cold standard issue, he's trained with it, even shot two people once in extremity, when it had been those poor humans and the demons riding them, or the lives of dozens. He's never entered into the equation as something to be saved. Now the gun is foreign, not warming to his palm, the pentacle distinct and sharp against his skin.
How do you know he didn't ask for this? Lilith asks.
How do you know he wasn't so desperate he'd do anything to make sure he didn't have the life John Winchester wanted for him?
Anything, anything to get the grades, the schools, the degree, so he could have money and a fucking life.
Almost he can hear Sam's voice, because Sam had said those same things to him.
Of course, you could be right. Sammy could just be too good and pure, and it was an unfortunate accident that let me take him for a test drive.
The demon stops in front of the altar and turns, and the smile now is purely Lilith. No Sam in it at all.
And that's where you come in, sweetie.
What the hell do you mean?
Ruby stands silhouetted by the fire, her dark hair catching it, turning it to an infernal halo. The long knife in her hand, almost a short sword, glitters, the runes carved in it turning it prismatic. Just beyond her, Castiel stands safe in the center, proud, like he's going down and not turning away. An angel or not, he's got guts.
That's the problem with these rituals. Everything has to be by the book, Lilla sighs.
That means the sacrifices, even the last one, have to be willing.
I need consent.
So Cass was right.
Some of the previous five, they've had deals. They were told what they were giving in to, and they agreed.
Sealed with a kiss.
Two quick steps to Dean, and Dean has to move again. Get Ruby in his line of sight. Some of the others have been my faithful followers and gave themselves up to me like lovers.
The last thing I want, Dean growls, is you talking about sex while you're in my brother.
I'm sure any sex I had with him would be lovely, Lilla says with a smile. But that's not the point.
The point is, they've all consented.
And perhaps maybe Sam hasn't. So my proposition, Detective Winchester, as you're so good at self-sacrifice, offer yourself up in place of your brother.
No!
Castiel's voice breaks through the net Lilith managed to weave.
Angel face, Ruby says coolly. This isn't for you to decide.
She's right.
Lilith doesn't even bother looking back at Castiel. She does smirk at the cult, though.
You have my word, and by the laws of heaven and hell, you know I have to keep it.
If you refuse, I kill Sam right now, myself, and you'll get to see whether or not he died willingly. Not that it'll matter, of course, because he'll be dead.
A fatalistic shrug.
On the other hand, sacrifice yourself, and I swear to you your brother will go free and live until his natural death.
I'll never possess him again.
No one else, Dean says hoarsely.
The smoke stings. The despair in Castiel's face burns even worse. He takes one step closer, slightly to the side.
No other demon touches him.
Fine, Lilla snaps. You have my word, and may it be unbroken until the end of time, undoes all things, and all bargains are unsealed.
You said sealed with a kiss, right?
He shudders, makes himself take a step closer, closer to the alien white eyes that watch him, with all the superiority of a demon that knows it's won.
The things I do for you, Sammy.
Such a brother, Lilith whispers, power curving around the words, low and throbbing. And Dean's stomach turns over.
Maybe not Cain and Abel after all. He hands the demon his badge, the only personal thing he's got, and hard lodged in his throat, he watches as Sam's large hands cup it reverently. And that smile.
It's a fight not to shut his eyes against it, because Lilith is moving to place it on the altar, and his line of sight opens up. It's there.
It's there.
Cass's voice is supersonic, a whipcrack of thunder in his brain.
Now!
And even with the smoke and the pain and the terror he's never seen so clearly before, and he knows he's a good shot, but he knows this will work even as his heart stutters with fear, because his sight is so clear he can almost see the future, and Cass glowing with barely checked power. There's a mark on Ruby, a bullseye, and he aims for it, and he knows from the second he pulls the trigger and hears Lilith roar of fury, he'll die, and maybe Sam will die too. But it's his only shot. Ruby spins in time to catch the bullet between her eyes. Her mouth falls open with shock and death, and her skin, her pretty face, splinters in fine lines and fissures. The yellow-gold, demonic light flares from the bullet wound, and those lines pulsing briefly before fading and guttering. Backwards, down she falls, sword clattering on the concrete, and her body, fucking Cass, brilliant fucking bastard of an angel that he is, uses it to bridge the circle of fire.
No!
The word sears the air, and the windows shake, shiver to shards. Lilith wheels on Dean, hand coming up, grasping at air, and Dean's heart stops. His vision grays at the edges, and he struggles, but there is no fighting this. Shut your eyes. Cass's silent voice is tattered, scorched. Do it, Dean. He does, not because Cass wants him to, but because he's dying. And he hopes Cass gets that. He wonders briefly, the light guttering, fade to black Winchester, if Cass has lost anyone on the battlefield before. Something fierce presses against his skull. A pressure, he thinks, is Lilith trying to pull his brain out his nose. Distantly, he's aware his nose is bleeding, a small accent of liquid and warmth. His vision goes white, and his hearing breaks, and he stares death right in the face. Death looks like nothing. His back hurts, and dry blood tickles his upper lip, the edge of his nostril. He's cold, but it's only a vague knowledge of cold. Mostly his back and the backs of his legs, his arms where they're pressed against the concrete. Slowly, as he registers the cold and the warmth spreading along his chest, his thighs, the firm hand on his shoulder, his body comes back to him and is his again.
Dean?
It's Bobby, kneeling beside him, and way too close, as always.
Bobby.
His voice almost doesn't belong to him. It's cracked, and small, and strange. Bobby.
It's me, you idiot, Bobby grunts.
He's smiling, though, suspiciously liquid around the eyes. Is he dying? He can't fucking think.
Did we save the day? Did we... There's another question, a huge one. He doesn't want the answer.
You did, Bobby says. The hand on Dean's left shoulder is an anchor, so tight it hurts. With his head flopped to the side, Dean can see small burns dotting Bobby's fingers. Everything's wet, he realizes. Maybe from fire hoses putting out that fire. Ruby's dead. Lilith is dead.
Sam?
With the paramedics. Dean struggles, bones like water or no. He's getting up, and with the paramedics could mean anything, from a strained finger to almost dead. Bobby has to help him, strength taking what is pretty much all of Dean's suddenly dead weight. Stay still, for God's sake, Bobby grumbles, but even as he complains, helps Dean to his uncertain feet. He doesn't look at the altar, in case Bobby's lying and Sam really is dead, and something else happened in the space between his last moment of awareness. Light, the light that had been Cass, flaring like a supernova, and Lilith wheeling to face the angel coming at her, and waking up. When he drags in a breath past aching ribs, he tastes that bitter, thick taste of burning flesh. But no, no, that has to be Ruby, he tells himself. The fire circle smoldering, demon barbecue now. Involuntarily, he glances at the altar. There is a sword there, glittering coldly.
Cass.
Sorry, Dean. Bobby has a hand under Dean's arm now, supporting most of his weight.
Dean tries to take a bit more onto himself, and grudgingly Bobby lets him. We saw the explosion, and we had to get our asses in gear. He was gone by the time we got here.
Yeah.
Dean swallows tightly.
He barely knew the guy, he reminds himself, and he's lost people before.
He's a soldier. Cass was a soldier. They know the drill. And his mind still skips on the thought, a needle caught in a fault in a record. Sam. Sam's still alive. Dean holds to that. They're out into the night, warm humidity clinging tight. The surreal flicker and pulse of emergency lights, red, white, and blue, enough for disco. The boxy ambulances wait behind the screen of squad cars, which means there's going to be a wait while they get cleared. But no, Bobby's ordering the 5 officers, their guns drawn, to let them through, voice heavy with authority, and the 5 men step to the side obediently. So it's only 30 more feet then to Sam. Sam on the gurney, surrounded by medics. Sam sitting up, saying something to Bobby. The last I remember is the office party and talking to Christy. She had something in her hand.
Sammy?
His voice still isn't his. It sounds like it's coming from somewhere way far away. Maybe it's because he almost can't believe this. Sam whole, and aside from a bandage or two, unbroken, grinning sheepishly at him. He misses it, despite the world going slow-mo and too fast at once. Bobby helping him the rest of the way, and the next thing he knows, he's got Sam wrapped around him, crushing the life out of him. The life that Cass, for all he knows, had stuffed back inside. Sam's tears are hot on Dean's neck, and quite possibly Dean's crying too. But he's allowed. They're both alive and kicking, and he didn't lose Sam. Sam, almost the very last thing in Dean's world.
Jesus, he can't hold tight enough, hands fisted in Sam's terrible pink paisley shirt. Jesus, Sammy.
It's cool, Sam mumbles, snuffling. He pulls back and swipes at his runny nose and red eyes. A cut on his cheek has reopened, and he winces. It's all cool, Dean.
It is.
Even though he's not quite ready to believe them, he says the words.
What have I told you about pretty girls with knives?
She got me alone. Sam shivers and pulls at the cheap fleece blanket the medic's given him. I was just saying to Victor that's the last thing I remember. At least, that seems sort of real. I had Pamela run a scan on this girl, Bobby says quietly, nodding to a body bag and its gurney nearby. She turned up in Sam's firm in September. She was also in a serious car wreck about a year ago, a couple of months before Sam started. Comatose. One day the docs came in and she'd woken up.
A real fucking miracle, Dean mutters.
He pounds Sam's shoulder.
So, all that about Jess?
Lilith, I guess. Sam frowns, eyes screwed shut. I remember things, but I don't know if what I remember is real. I remember saying I was calling everything off, I needed space. And everything after that is... I remember talking to you once, I think, but it's like a dream.
Yeah.
Dean swallows harshly.
Don't worry about it, Sam.
It's cool. It's cool. He registers Victor joining them. A quick, how you doing for Sam, that Sam answers with an uncertain, I've been better. Victor turns to talk to Bobby, clearing the scene type stuff that Bobby weighs away as technicalities. The demon, Sam says softly, is it?
Cass,
Dean mutters. He has to swallow again.
Castiel, this angel we've been working with him, took care of it. It's gone.
He's gone. Sam lets out a breath and lets the paramedic guide him down to the gurney's thin pillow. Lying there like that, he looks smaller. Say thanks to him for me, Sam mumbles, closing his eyes against something that makes him grunt.
Then, before Dean can say, I will,
or blink away the regret that comes with knowing there's no way to deliver that message, the medics shove everyone out of the way, load Sam into the ambulance, and they're gone.
Go get your ass cleaned up, Bobby tells him.
An order seconded by Victor, who adds a helpful,
You look like 2-day-old dog shit, Winchester.
Victor pokes him in the arm to emphasize this and adds,
And get that shoulder checked out.
He doesn't feel the pain until Victor says the words. And now,
son of a bitch, does he feel it.
It's a deep, radiant ache, except when it stings with skin pulled tight. He glares at his shoulder, not really wanting to see, but having to look anyway. And through the charred, tattered scraps of t-shirt sleeve is pink shining flesh. Gritting his teeth,
great, what the hell did that bitch do?
He delicately pulls the fabric up and away to reveal the handprint seared there.
I'll be fucked, he mutters.
He turns into the shadows a bit away from the lurking paramedics. In what light that's left, the print stands out clearly, brand new, emphasis on brand. Something to take with him, then. Bits of the t-shirt flake away. Underneath, he sees this when he pulls the collar out to check. The blood sigil is still there, a bit fainter, as though it subsided into his skin.
Okay, then, he tells himself,
and goes to find Victor and a ride to the hospital to sit with his brother for a while.
2 days later, the doctors and psychics pronounce Sam clean. Dean out of the room so he doesn't distract Pamela or the doctor with mental clutter. Your aura's like a ping-pong ball, Winchester, Pamela had said, her hands on his arms to emphasize her order to stay put. Here's the, you're clear, Sam, and the weight that comes off him makes him dizzy. He barges into Sam's room the second he hears the verdict, in time to see Pamela leer at Sam as she steps back from his bed. No need to be grumpy, grumpy. And there's really no need, because Jess has been hovering outside, using Dean's shirt as a tissue. I guess Lil, the demon, must have told her we were done, Sam says, staring distractedly down into the golden chaos of Jess's hair, huge arms clamped around her. Good God, he's crying, and Dean isn't. No. No way. We aren't, are we? Sam asks, bare naked hope, and that hangdog smile. No, Jess mumbles into the vast expanse of Sam's shoulder. You wouldn't last a day without me. Dean has to escape, feeling his teeth rot from the sugar and a huge, hollow feeling opening up somewhere around his liver. Eventually, after what was probably a lot of crying and declarations of love and emotions and other things that make Dean grimace to contemplate, Sam and Jess emerge, holding hands and grinning in a way that makes Dean kind of embarrassed for them.
We've got an appointment with Ash, Dean says,
and Sam immediately lapses back into sheepishness. Jess squeezes his hand and tells him not to worry. It's a ridiculous admonishment, although Dean can't fault her for it. Anyone who's been possessed and not wanted it knows enough to worry in the future. As if on cue, Sam's hand goes to his tattoo, still broken. Let's get a move on, Dean says, and hustles Sam out the door. He watches Ash tattoo Sam himself, even though he knows Ash and trusts him, and the guy does a lot of work for the department. It takes longer, Sam sweating it out and staring at the ceiling as Ash works in extra details and clips away a bit of Sam's hair, grown out to a truly ridiculous length.
Are you allowed, Dean asks, to go into court like this?
And Sam had asked Dean very politely to bite him, to ink in the 3 Enochian letters and the cartouche Cass has put on Dean. Call it an insurance policy. We're not going to let this happen again, Dean says, gripping Sam's hand. Sam's hand crushes his in turn as Ash's needle marches slowly across his spine.
Never again, Sammy.
Find my me, Sam breathes.
He squints up at Dean, careful not to move.
How about you?
Dean presses a hand against his ribs, keeps himself from touching the scar on his shoulder.
I'm good, Sammy, he says, gritting his teeth when Sam squeezes extra hard. All taken care of.
Good, Sam whispers. That's real good, Dean.
Dean wakes up with his legs tangled in the sheets and a mouth that, for a wonder, for a miracle, doesn't taste like stale alcohol and the 10,000 buffalo wings he thinks he ate last night. Ellen had opened up the roadhouse, and the entire precinct had been down there celebrating. Sam and Jess, too. Rolling over on his back, Dean stares up at the ceiling, a muscle in his stomach twitching under his fingers. There's still bitterness. Ellen hadn't asked about Cass, but it had been all there anyway, when she'd glanced at Dean's right side, where Cass would be, and Dean had to say Cass had left, or been killed. He doesn't know which of the two. Stop obsessing, he tells himself fiercely. The You've Got Mail light blinks on his phone, and it's Bobby, telling him to not even think about coming in today. They'll sort everything out in a couple of days once he's got his head back together. He ignores it, is in his clothes and out of the door in 15 minutes, hoping Bobby will understand about the adrenaline, the needing time to absorb the fact that it's nearly over. Or it is over, because Cass is gone. Maybe gone because he'd gotten zapped back. Or gone. For real gone. Like Dean's mom. Hasn't accepted that yet. Either way, it's the same. Good morning, sunshine, Bobby says without surprise when he sees Dean walk through screening and the double doors. Thought I was going to see you here at 7. It's working on 8, and Dean's working on a hangover. And a case hangover. And gnawing disappointment. Bobby looks slightly hungover, too. Not that it helps Dean any. Before you go and make Victor's life difficult, Bobby says, make yourself useful and get those papers off my printer. He waves vaguely at the printer that, for space reasons, is across the office. Sciatica is acting up. He turns around, sciatica my ass, on his lips, and there's a spell box on the table where the printer is. It's open, and in it is Cass's sword, reflecting long streaks of yellow and blue and silver. No one's been back to claim it, and it's been through decon and evidence processing, Bobby says. He's pointedly looking down at his papers. You worked with him. You might as well take it. Dean shuts his mouth before something stupid can come out of it. Thanks, Bobby. Get out of here. Dean closes the box and gets out. Even through the warts and the heavy casing of iron, the sword seems to pulse with something of its owner's power. Dean has no idea whether he wants to keep holding on to it or shove the thing in the deepest, most forgotten corner of his closet. It's incentive to go home, at any rate, which is probably what Bobby wanted him to do in the first place. The box, after spending a few minutes in the closet, where Dean keeps most of his firearms, the few things he'd inherited from his dad, including a vintage Colt, maybe one of Samuel Colt's own, ends up on his bedside table. And Dean ends up on his bed, staring dully at it. It's 10 kinds of wrong and all kinds of fucked up. He'd known the guy for not even 2 weeks. And he'd spend a good part of that time being an angel, impossible and playing by rules that drive Dean crazy and that he can't begin to understand. I'm not about to start praying, he tells the box, because he's never thought of the supernatural as anything to pray to. You get by on your own resources, not the unpredictable help of the spirit world. You hear me? Only, somewhere in those 2 weeks, way too fast and blurry for Dean to work out the process, Cass had stopped being an angel and had, mostly, stopped being a dick and had become something very like a friend. And you just don't make friends with something that can burn your eyes out. That's one of the first rules in Dean's handbook for living a long, unfucked up life, and he'd gone and broken it. Jesus, Cass, I miss you. And because that's way too pathetic to contemplate, he picks the box up and stuffs it in his weapons closet, shuts the door and makes sure the iron charms around the lock are secure. He flops down on the couch and defiantly turns the TV on. Miracle of miracles, maybe the universe doesn't hate him completely, because Dr. Sexy's on instead of any one of the million interminable procedural shows. Only, it's the end of the episode. Dean sighs, debates reaching for the remote control, and rejects the idea. The episode ends, and after 10 minutes of commercials, Ghost Facers, one of the million interminable procedural shows, comes on. Dean gets hives whenever he sees the thing. Don't they fucking know hunting spirits is not like that? And there are 1,000 more programs just like it. CSI Supernatural Crime Investigations, Supernatural Victims Unit, even this show set in an alternate universe where no one knows about spirits and monsters, and these two guys have to save the world. Dean feels sorry for those guys, the bastards, and wishes the Ghost Facers would just get vaporized by a pissed-off deity.
Off the TV goes, leaving behind the faint hum of white noise, and the life in the other apartments around him is a strange, distant soundtrack that pulls him towards sleep. When he wakes up, he gravitates towards the sword again. It feels odd in his hands when he picks it up, remaining cold and refusing to warm to his flesh. It's on the border of searing, that deep metallic chill that makes the bones ache. The blade is four-edged, each edge finely honed and sharp enough to make the cut almost painless, until the blood wells up. Dean sucks on his finger until the blood dries, carefully wipes away the thin line of blood with a washcloth. Even more carefully, he puts the sword back in its box. And even in the shadow of his body and the ordinary, earthly light of his bedroom lamp, it glows with a brilliance it's borrowed from somewhere else. Cass's home, maybe. Heaven. Dean closes his eyes and kicks the box back under the bed again. The day passes, nondescript, between short, unhappy dozing on the couch and occasional fierce admonishments to snap the fuck out of it. He knows it'll pass. It's the crash after the adrenaline. It's losing someone who'd been, however temporarily, a partner. And he hates losing anyone. Period. End of story. Likely that means he's going to turn into Sam any day now. And speaking of Sam, Dean almost, kind of, wants to call him. Only Sam and Jess need some time together. Probably to decide whether Dean's wedding tux will be the teal or fuchsia cummerbund. After a while, an uncertain space of time, hunger drives him off the couch, and laziness decides it's SpaghettiO tonight. Cooked because cold SpaghettiOs are stakeout food and edible only because they gross Victor out. Dean turns the gas on and dumps the can into the pot, and watches as the red, not sauce, spreads across and warms. Had the SpaghettiOs people changed the recipe since the stuff first came out? Probably not. Desultorily, he pokes at the SpaghettiOs with a spoon, somewhere in that weird hungry-not-hungry space, and already half-decided against actually eating anything. Dean grips the edge of the countertop on either edge of the stove, rests his weight on his hands. The warmth from the flame travels upward, his skin tingling where it's closest to the fire, even the handprint on his shoulder, which he steadfastly avoided looking at since it got there. Still, he feels it anyway, and sometimes a phantom pressure, as though Cass's hand is still there. "Damn it, Cass," he shakes his head. "You idiot." And he's not entirely sure if he means that for Cass or himself. Heat radiates up his arm, down his spine, a sudden pulse of it that makes him jump back from the stove, eyes wide and heart pounding, the world speeding up for a moment. "What the fuck?" "Hello, Dean." He barely, barely remembers not to put his hand on the hot stove to brace himself. "Jesus!" His heart wants to climb up his throat and stop his lungs from working, and he can't quite square his life not 20 seconds ago with what's in front of him. His mind won't let him. Not when his life's been what it's been. "But it's Cass," part of him clamors. "Cass, who's real, and not dead." Still as disheveled as ever, the faintest smile resting on his mouth. "What?" Dean tries to cough out the disbelief, is too overwhelmed to quite manage it. "What the... I thought you were dead." "No," Cass says softly. He has his hands in his pockets. "When Lilith died, I was released." And the smile becomes rueful. "Well, I was hauled back to the garrison."
"You were?"
Cass doesn't look any the worse for wear. Maybe a bit tired. Maybe not. Still, he remembers what Cass had said about orders. "They're absolute. You don't modify. You don't second guess. You don't get to pick what to follow and what to say fuck you to." He imagines the punishment for towing the line must be pretty stiff, let alone the punishment for out and out ignoring the line and stepping over it.
"Cass. And shit, did they torture angels up there? Cass, I didn't want you to..."
"It's okay, Dean." With a sigh, Cass seems to settle. He looks around Dean's small kitchen. Odd what it's like not having Cass look at him. As though he's never seen it before. When he looks back, the smile is still there, and try as he might, Dean can't find a shred of accusation in Cass's face.
As if to prove it, Castiel holds up his wrist, a thin burn mark there, still shiny, the only mark Dean's ever seen on Cass's skin. "My orders," Cass says simply, like it explains everything, instead of precisely nothing, and lets his wrist fall, so the long sleeve of his coat covers it again.
"Was that Lilith?"
"No." The trench coat rustles as Cass takes a step closer. In the confines of the kitchen, his presence is overwhelming, hot and exciting. And whether it's Cass doing it on purpose or Cass being Cass, Dean has no idea. But it gets him going, his heart thumping, his entire body coming alive for the first time since he woke up in that abandoned building. "That was me. It's what I had to do."
"You got it done."
"And he did. He so fucking did."
"You stone-cold son of a bitch."
And he's grinning now. Because, Jesus, Sam is okay and getting better, and Cass is alive. And Cass is here, standing close, pleasure radiating off him. Like he knows, and he probably does, because Cass has a lot of attitude packed into that body of his.
"I did," Cass says quietly, and the words are heartfelt. "So, they're letting you have some vacation time?" Dean asks.
Now that he's close enough, he can see Cass is fucking exhausted. And now that he has seen, Dean knows how Cass's body gives evidence to how tired he is. The few centimeters his shoulders stray from military precision. The lines around his eyes, like the hard edges of angelic grace, have softened into something human.
"You know, you can go home, see the folks, go to the beach."
Cass shrugs, and Dean tries again.
"Read books, whatever. You could borrow some of Sammy's romance novels. I swear he's got a stash of the things."
"Maybe." Castiel's tone is curiously noncommittal. Dean can kind of understand that. He's forgotten what vacation is, and he's not entirely sure what to do with free time that goes beyond weekends. He leans against the convenient kitchen table, still tired, a night of not dying, and then talking to people, explaining what he still can't understand, almost losing Sam, and getting him back, thinking Cass had been gone. "I was demoted, actually," Cass says, after a moment, "for disobedience." Dean thinks suddenly of Cass's face, the flicker of honest pain when he'd said what he'd said.
"You don't know anything about my family if you think he'd let himself be ridden like this, and you're a fucking idiot if you think I haven't looked out for him."
And on top of that, he'd badgered Cass into breaking the rules, and he can't feel bad about that. Not when it got him Sam back, and definitely not when Cass is here, alive and well, endlessly serious like only Cass can be.
"I owe you."
Dean closes his eyes, not that it helps. The memory burns with guilt.
"A huge fucking apology. I shouldn't have said what I did, and I shouldn't have made you help me."
"No, you don't," Cass says quietly. "When you bargained for your brother's life, I understood what you were saying about family." He smiles, his old, sad smile. "I don't usually think of my own brothers that way."
"I was being an idiot."
The confession hurts too.
"I thought since he was my brother, there was no way I'd leave him open to that happening."
"You were angry at yourself." Cass is looking at him again, face kind, knowing, and Dean doesn't quite get how it doesn't rankle, knowing Cass is skimming over the surface of his thoughts. "You believed in that moment that you'd failed him, but you couldn't admit it."
"Thanks, Dr. Freud."
"I don't understand that reference." He's closer now. Close enough to touch, almost. Cass steps towards him, uncertain, as though he suddenly remembered rules about space, or doesn't entirely know if Dean's going to welcome him. To answer that silent question, Dean takes Cass by the wrist and pulls him in, mouth on the burned, smooth skin. Cass breathes in sharply, mouth falling open and breath escaping in a sigh as Dean licks at the scar. The fine woven veins just beneath their covering of skin, the salt taste in the indent of his palm. And then Cass is moving, and they're kissing, really, actually kissing again. And Cass isn't backing off, not at all. He takes Dean's breath and gives it back to him, and his hands are in Dean's hair, cupping his neck, and Dean's got his arms under Cass's coat and jacket, so beautifully, beautifully close to the long, firm line of Cass's body. Cass stretches against him, engraved invitation for Dean to pull the shirt from his trousers, and oh God, it's Cass, and he's hot, perfect, and it's a drug, having Cass under his hands and under his own skin. And he's so far gone with it, he almost doesn't hear the smoke alarm or catch the smell of his dinner cooking down to carbon. That day, after leaving Ellen's, he dissolved the binding symbols on his wrist. He'd wrapped himself in as many layers of shielding as possible, and, hidden in the vaults of an old church, tucked under his wings, he'd heated the blade of his sword and set it to the sigil. Still, he shudders at the pain and the memory of lying sprawled across the floor, wings stretched across the small cellar room, the feathers lapping at the stone. And then, the moment Lilith had screamed and died under his hands, he'd felt for a moment his own existence waver. She'd been powerful, and only the sigils he'd used to armor himself had kept her fury from tearing his grace apart. And his own power? It had almost burned Sam out of himself, and he'd been so weak to begin with, fighting against Lilith's possession. Far, far worse would have been to see Dean die. Worse even than Lilith calling forth Lucifer. Worse than her using Dean's blood to do it. He'd had enough time to do that, at least, to pull himself together, cover Dean's body with his, and tie flesh and soul together again. Castiel holds tight to Dean, and wishes for the first time ever to tether himself to flesh and its permanence. The scar under his hand, angelic, Cass knows, it will never fade, is shaped perfectly to his palm and fingers. The skin burns smooth, still sensitive, and Dean groans against his mouth, a plea to be careful, even as he shifts so Cass can grip him more firmly. He can taste Dean's own desperation, a tangible heavy presence in the air, on his tongue when Dean breathes against his mouth, obscene and endearing and begging, "Come on, Cass, come on, you can let it." He holds tight again, pulling Dean down hard, his own spine the tense arc of a drawn bow, and lets it. By the time Dean gets back to the precinct, blissed out and a bit high on sex and triumph and disbelief, although it's finally starting to settle in, that it's done, over with, they won. Missouri greets him with a short remark about paperwork, and Joe says they got a report called in about noise violations, someone having night-long raunchy sex in Dean's apartment. It's back to normal. "So," Bobby says, eyeing Dean skeptically from across the mountain range of papers on his desk, "you want to put the angel to work?" "It's not like he doesn't want to." Dean elbows Cass in the side, and Cass, distracted by some old curse etchings mounted on Bobby's wall, swings his attention back obediently. "I'm not used to lazing," he explains with a look at Dean, "and for the foreseeable future I've been recalled from the front." Recalled isn't quite the right word, although it's not like they booted Cass with a dishonorable discharge. On leave without pay, Dean supposes. Cass still has his mojo, his wings, his irritating inability to understand pop culture references. And he has a sword back, retrieved from the spellbox stashed under Dean's bed. "The foreseeable future for you guys can be quite a long time," Bobby shrugs. "Well, if you want to, and hell, if Dean wants you to, I don't suppose there's any stopping it." Dean fist punches the air, because it's icing on the cake. Victor back in his office, and the two of them back together, and he probably still owes Cass thanks for that, for seeing Victor safe. And Cass, his city's guardian angel. For all Cass's refusal to admit he perches on shoulders or rooftops. "There's one thing," Cass says, and that earns a suspicious look from Bobby. "Do I want to know?" "Not really," Castiel tells him. "But I feel I should ask anyway." Bobby laughs, a choked, surprised sound, and a gesture for Cass to get on with it. "I ain't got all day, Castiel. What is it?"
I, Castiel says, eyes bright and almost hopeful, expression avid, like Dean rarely sees it, would like a badge. And Dean laughs and laughs. The end.